Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast, where we embark on a journey through our diverse Texas landscapes and breathtaking trails while always engaging with our amazing Texas hiking community. So settle in, tighten up those bootlaces, and get ready for the thrilling tales awaiting for you on this episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast. I'm your host, as always, Jason. Man, I can't believe we are already in episode 9. What I think is most exciting is this is the second episode in a row where I have a Texas legend, a hiking legend. Todd, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm more of a legend in my own mind.
You, Joe, y'all are legends to me, for sure. So,
well, thank you.
Yeah. So just to kind of get everybody up to speed of kind of how we met, you are the creator of the Guadalupe Mountains Backcountry Hikers Facebook group. And I want to first off, thank you for creating that group, because as you know, and as the listeners know, my favorite place on earth is the Guadalupe Mountains. This Facebook page allows me to be supported in some of the things that I love doing, you know, like the backcountry, you know, your knowledge, as well as the members of that group's knowledge of Guadalupe Mountains, of Lincoln National Forest, even Carlsbad is pretty impressive. And I just want to thank you for creating that page. So I think you created it in 2022. Like what was going through your mind?
It was 21 or 22. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah.
But, it was needed. The big Guadalupe Mountains fan page, you know, the one that has 10,000 members or whatever.
Right.
It's just post after post about the peak. And
preach on, brother.
the peak is cool and all, you know. I've done it like 6 times.
Right.
And I mean, it's a state high point. You have to do it before they'll issue you your Texas driver's license.
Absolutely.
but it gets old after a while. Right. And the funny thing is about creating the page, I had quit social media altogether. I deleted my profiles on Facebook, Insta, everything. You know, I'm of the opinion that social media is a cancer upon society.
I agree.
But it's also in some ways necessary these days, you know. But anyway, I deleted all my stuff, and I'm also the admin for the official Ouachita Trail Facebook group.
Oh wow.
And we're the biggest source of information for the Ouachita Trail. Well, I quit social media and I passed the admin duties of that over to my friend Kathy.
Mm-hmm.
It was a couple months later. She texted me. She's like, "Todd, I can't do this. This is just too much moderating. You know, too many people being stupid. I'm tired of it."
Yeah.
And of course, me being me, I feel responsible for the page because I was the one that started it. And, you know, I'm such a big proponent of the Ouachita Trail. Okay, I'll get back on social media. I'll get back on Facebook, you know, so the page doesn't die.
Right.
Well, as soon as I did that, you know, okay, well, I'll get back on this group. I'll get back on this group. Well, I tried to rejoin the Guadalupe Mountains fan group page.
Right.
And I don't know if you know, but he's got their admin team has a setting where you can't post anything until you've been a member of the page for X amount of weeks or X amount of months, something like that.
Okay.
So I messaged the admin. I was like, "Hey, this is who I am. Here's some of my old posts. You know, I'm not somebody
bot
that's just,
or,
yeah, exactly. I'm not a bot. I'm not some guy in India.
You're not looking for a date."
Exactly. "Is there any way you can bypass this for me so I can, you know, I've got a lot of information to share."
Right.
And he banned me from the group.
What?
he banned me from the group. No explanation, no anything. So I was like, okay, well, that's fine. I'll start my own group. you know, I'm reminded of the episode of Futurama where Bender's like, fine, I'll start my own casino with blackjack and hookers. So that was the basis. The real stimulus for starting the backcountry group was, you know what? There's too many posts about the peak and I'm not allowed in this group anymore for some reason. So I'll start my own group and we'll focus more on the remainder of the park.
Right.
You know, because there's four and a half miles of peak trail and 80 other miles of trail in the park that nobody ever sees.
Right.
So that was my thinking on that.
So right now, are you still, you're not allowed to the,
I can't even find the page.
No, they're fixing to lose a member then.
Well, so, it's like I say, it's social media is cancer. It's just one less thing to occupy, you know, one less thing to occupy my time. But I'm happy with the backcountry group. We're still small and we tend to focus on the more obscure stuff.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? I was already part of the backcountry and I don't even remember how I found it. I think probably also tired of someone saying they're climbing the highest peak in Texas. It's just a trail. But I'll digress. But you made a post, and this is before like I even like understood like you were the ad or the creator and Todd. But you made a post and you said, is there anybody out there that is also looking at how to hike the longest trail in Guadalupe, connecting to Guadalupe and Lincoln National Forest? Well, it was funny because at that moment you posted that, I was actually looking at how I can tie this into this, not so much in the Lincolns, just in the Guads, but like, how can I tie this and tie that? And then I just started laughing. I'm like, there is somebody out there that loves this area as much as me. And then, okay, so then your name, and I think I even responded, and then like your name just kind of like stuck in my mind. And then I was just going back and just through Facebook, this and that, but like you and I have made comments on the Lone Star Hiking Trail, like the same post, and like even commented on each other's, you know, like if I had a question or this or that, like, so it's the same thing with Joe, with Trekker Joe's, Joe Williams, who was on the previous episode. Like, we have so many Facebook pages in common. We've commented on each other's
right
posts. We've helped each other. And it's just, as big as the world is, it's a small world.
Well, and as big as Texas is, it feels like the hiking community is condensed down to, I don't want to sound elitist and call, you know, the real hikers.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's the people that want to go out, oh, let's go take a walk down such and such trail. And then the people that are like, hey, I think I can string together a 70-mile trip through the backcountry of Guadalupe, you know. So it's funny.
I break it up as the people that want to litter on the trail and then the people that want to pick up all the trash off the trail.
Preach.
I made a post on the Lone Star Hiking Trail. I was doing, I think it was a 15-mile day, and I picked up, I have the best Subaru Outback ever. I picked up more trash and it filled up the back of my car on that one hike than, it was crazy. And I even couldn't, like, it was too much. Like, I usually carry a trash bag when I hike and just pick up stuff. And my trash bag was full. And, you know, and most of the stuff outside of the trash bag, you know, for me hiking, was at the trailhead.
It's disgusting.
The amount of trash at the trailhead. And
it's funny, the further away you get from the trailhead, the less trash you see.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And of course, then you've got the people that, you know, going back to Guadalupe, how many times have you gone up the peak and had to pick up banana peels and orange peels?
Oh, man, don't even get me started.
And, it's biodegradable. Well, yeah, if you're walking through an orange grove in Florida.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that soil is not.
Yeah, this is a desert environment.
Yes. Yeah, don't even. Yeah, we'll
one of those that, yeah, I'll get on my soapbox and.
Yeah, yeah, we will have a 9-hour episode if we let that. Yeah, and I think it. You know, let's step back a second. I think it's important that the listeners hear, if you have banana pills, orange pills, don't throw that, because it's not going to decompose, or maybe it's going to take tons of time. If it's, you know, just pack your stuff out.
It's not hard.
No.
I mean, if you throw away an orange peel, the guts of the orange, you've already eaten it. You're carrying out less than you carried in.
Yes.
It's not more work.
You see these, I don't know, well, the listeners can't see, but these smart water bottles.
Yep.
I reuse these because you know, they fit the filter. Some of these are what I picked up off the trail, and I just washed them out. Like, and just, I use them.
And they fit into the Trucker Joe's shoulder sleeves. Perfect.
That.
Shout out to my boy, Joe.
There is not a lot of gear that has changed my life. And I have Z-Packs and Hyperlite and Ultras and whatever. But that Trucker Joe's products, if you don't have at least one of those shoulder water bottle holders, you shouldn't even be hiking. You should have two. And I was on the episode that we had, like, I saw him with the two front ones. And so we went up this, my trip in October, we went. And so now in Guadalupe Mountains, I've hiked the whole park, backpacked a lot of it. Now I'm trying to stay at all the backcountry campsites. And we were at McKittrick Ridge campsite. And I just said, you know, I'm going to try to carry, because it's a big water carry.
Oh, yeah.
I had, you know, 2 liters in the front and then two in the back and then one in my backpack. That was a game changer.
Oh,
The weight distribution.
It carries so much better.
Yes. So if you're listening and you don't have a Trucker Joe's, any of the products, but those water bottle sleeve holders, man, go take up another sport or another hobby. Yeah, so that's another thing, that his products are wonderful. And you're supporting a family, not a CEO for a third beach house or a vacation home.
And just a great guy. Just a great guy.
Joe's wonderful. Absolutely. All right, so anyway, so that's kind of how we met. And, you know, since that one post that you did, you know, like, I think I've started talking more. And again, I just want to thank you for creating that Facebook page.
Oh, for sure.
It definitely gives me an outlet where I can have conversations with very experienced people about a place in Texas that I love more than anything. And I don't have to see climbing the highest peak or, you know, this or that. And I'm not saying that I'm above, you know, those types of things, because I always want to try to bring people to hiking and stuff, but it just gives me a need that I didn't have before.
Understood. Yeah. I like that with the backcountry group, I can bounce ideas off of people, you know. Hey, I'm thinking about doing such and such. And, you know, Jason may chime in. Oh, yeah, I did this trail right here. Okay. You know, we can get an idea of what's out there.
Yeah, watch out for the mountain lion.
Have you ever seen a lion at Guadalupe?
So I have never seen a mountain. I've seen two times tracks. So one was at a top of Tejas, kind of like going down. It had snowed like the day before. And so it was probably about 5 a.m. Sun was just coming up and we stumbled across some tracks. And then the backside of Bush, you know how you're coming. It's almost like you're coming, like you would be hiking on the Tejas and then you hit Bush, and almost like you hit Bush and then kind of go up to that north part. So mm-hmm. back there, we've seen some. And then here recently when Mr. Berry was lost, so he was lost kind of in that back northern part of the park.
The unvisited area of the park.
Yeah. We actually were on the trail, but we were following, I guess, I don't know what big deer is out there, but but these were big, kind of like deer type footprints, and there were some mountain lions that were seemed to be following that.
That's awesome. That's
my bucket list, and that's a dream, is to catch a mountain lion out there. That would be just heaven.
Wouldn't it be awesome? I mean, I can't imagine.
Yeah, for sure. How long have you been hiking and backpacking?
Well, I mean, to throw it way back, you know, I'm an old guy, and when I was growing up, you know, I grew up in the country, mm-hmm. and we were, you know, you're going to play outside. You're not going to sit inside all day.
Yep.
And my family had 10 acres of land.
Oh, nice.
And the next door neighbor, I still keep up with him. He's not related, but I call him Uncle Donald. He's got like, 60 or 80 acres of land. And we played in those woods. We built forts, played war, you know, played in the creeks, fished in the ponds. I mean, you were required to be outside. You weren't going to sit inside.
Yeah.
But I never did a lot of hiking. We did a lot of camping in the woods, but that was just, you know, we'd load the tent up and walk down the woods behind the house and camp. That all changed, you know, when you turn 16 and you get a driver's license. The family, we always haunted the Tyler State Park and the state parks around me. But we also made trips up to Arkansas to the Albert Pike area. And of course, once I got the driver's license, me and the buddies, we'd get somebody to buy us a case of beer, and we'd go up there and camp for the weekend. And you know, we did a little bit of walking in the woods, but it's nothing I would call hiking or backpacking. Flash forward to 2014, I remember it vividly. I was sitting on the couch one day. I was off work, watching TV, flipping channels, and I came across the show. It was an Appalachian Trail documentary. So I started watching it. I was like, wait a minute. There's a trail for footpath. It's a foot trail that's 2,200 miles long. Mind was blown. Had no idea anything like that existed.
Really? Yeah.
So, of course, the first thing I started thinking is, how can I do that? Well, there's no way. I can't get 6 months off of work. You know, I can't do it. But I started delving into it a little bit deeper. So there's a 96-mile trail, the Lone Star Trail, that's just 3.5 hours away. Well, 96 miles, I can do that in a week. So, you know, that's kind of where the seed formed. And, you know, did a little bit more research. There's a 200-mile trail, 3.5 miles north, you know, the Ouachita Trail. And that was it. I was hooked. It was, you know, let's go every weekend. Let me find somebody that wants to go walk in the woods with me. That's kind of how it started, you know. About 10 years ago is when I got the bug, and it hasn't left me since.
You know, and it's funny you say that about the Lone Star Hiking Trail, and I don't know when it's really the bug hit me, but, you know, I mean, you can see this is my gear. This is half, a quarter of my gear room right back behind me. But same thing, like, you know, like, I'm married, I have a family, I'm not, and I'm working, so there's no way that I'll be able to, you know, hike the PCT or AT. But like the Lone Star Hiking Trail, that's my PCT or my AT. And, mm-hmm. You know, it's literally both endpoints are about 90 or 50 minutes drive for me. And I'm kind of like
good
you,
to know.
Like,
good to know.
Yeah, I'm kind of like you that, you know, I may never be able to do some of that stuff, but I can certainly customize what I can do on the Lone Star mm-hmm. Hiking Trail. Like,
absolutely.
I can yo-yo it, or, you know, like, set up challenges 2 days, 3 days,
right.
6 days, whatever. So,
and
yeah,
that's what I like to do. I like to challenge myself to see what can I do with the time I have and the distance there is.
Yeah, and I'm probably about your age, and like, and kind of this kind of leads into the next question. So what inspires you to hike?
Well, you know, like I say, growing up out in the country, the woods was my sanctuary.
Yeah.
Whenever, I don't know, things weren't going, you know, in the teenage mind, the world's falling apart, you're mad at the world, I could always go down in the woods and be at peace.
Yeah.
And that's really, I think the crux of it is the woods have always been a peaceful place for me. I've turned that into something that, you know, kind of nowadays it kind of defines who I am. I'm the guy that likes to go out and walk in the woods.
Yeah. And so like, even right now, is it kind of the same, like, you know, you're in your 50s, I'm in my 50s. Do you find that kind of still get you motivated?
It is. Or, you know, yeah, it really kind of started out as just a way to, you know, when I first, like I say, back in 2014, when I first discovered long distance hiking, mm-hmm. it was a way to get away from work, to get out in the woods and unplug and relax and, you know, just become human again. And since I basically took early retirement, you know, I call it that, you know, I might have to go back to work eventually, but now it's a means to, you know, I can challenge myself. I can meet new friends. You know, some of my best friends in the world are people that I've met through hiking and backpacking.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's no friend like the friend that you've walked 100 miles with, you know,
or seen poop in the woods accidentally.
Yeah, it's like that's what it is.
It, you know, like for me, and I've said it on earlier episodes, you know, I'm 51, I'm type 2 diabetic, my thyroid doesn't work, high blood, you know, all this crap. And so to me, it's a challenge. Like I have to have a challenge in my life where I'm just like laying in bed, probably don't feel good. And, and, you know, like, and also like Joe and I were talking about this, you know, and it's like you said, the people that you meet on the trail are my best friends.
Yes.
The people that I'm most closest with, one lives in New Mexico, one lives in Washington State. I met both of those in Guadalupe Mountains. And then Henning, who I, you know, I climb with and we hike together.
My Instagram handle, my YouTube handle is Todd versus Todd.
Yeah.
And that comes from the Todd that wants to sit on the couch and watch TV and cook a big dinner and, you know, do that, versus the Todd that wants to get out on the trail and challenge himself to be the best person he can be.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I was also like, where I was going with this is my family members. So Lori hikes with me, my kids, they'll climb with me, but not really. My daughter will hike with me, but my boys won't, because they're just not into hiking. But like when there's issues and there's disconnect or there's stuff, like, We go hiking and, you know, like you're relying on each other. You have to talk to each other. You have to communicate. It's always been a way that to bring, you know, me and Lori or me and the kids or even all of us as a family closer together, because, you know,
absolutely,
at the end of the day, we all have to pull our weight and embrace the suck, I guess. Together.
You know, my wife doesn't hike with me. You know, she has her thing. She likes to go and do 5Ks with her friends.
Oh wow.
But you know, she doesn't want to go out and sleep in a tent.
Yeah.
My son, he's gone on a trip with me before and he had a good time, but it's not his jam.
How old is he?
He's 25.
Okay.
Just got married. So he's starting his own life. You know, I don't want to, hey, you need to quit what you're doing and go hike with your old man one day.
Right.
But when I'm out in the woods with my friends, like, you know, Joe and Kyle and I, you know, walking 120 miles on the Centennial Trail, you start opening up and you kind of reveal who you really are. At least that's the way I feel about it. Yeah. You know, you can only talk about, well, what'd you do at work today, you know, for so long? Or did you watch that new show on Netflix? You get out in the woods and you really open up and get to be who you really are.
Yeah. And you think about it, just people that we know, how sometimes, I don't know if trivia is the right word, but like you have these conversations and it's like, is it really meaningful? Or like, like you get into these conversations and like, and sometimes like I'm not even listening, you know, like, and, but you get out on a trail and
you start talking about the meaning of life.
Yes. And it's just a reconnection to, like, I think you said a second ago, like kind of being a human, like,
yeah,
our ancestry and stuff. And also just see, man, can you believe what God has created?
Well, you know,
the beauty and
every hike I take, I try to remember to verbally out loud give thanks for what I've got.
Yep.
You know, I'm thankful that I'm healthy enough to do this.
Yeah.
I'm thankful that I have a wife that supports me because she knows this is what makes me happy.
Yeah.
I give thanks that I'm financially able to do this. That I think being in the outdoors and being alone with your thoughts and or alone with people who are having the same thoughts, I think that brings that out.
Absolutely. For sure. And so what do you think hiking, backpacking mean to you? I know it's kind of like the inspired question, but like, I think like what happens if you couldn't hike and backpack? Like,
oh man.
Exactly.
I don't know if you know, but I'm just getting over a foot fracture. I haven't been able to walk for just a little over 2 months now. And it's hard. It is hard stepping away from the trail.
Yeah.
I had some friends that were up on the Washita Trail doing a through hike, and they texted me, "Hey man, come up here and meet us at the shelter." And I'm like, "Dude, I can't walk 2 miles into the woods." I mean, it would be tough to give up backpacking and hiking. It really would.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I can't remember what I was going to say. No.
So, but have you, and I kind of done it and thought about like at some point, like, you know, my trips to Guad, like every trip that I take to Guad, like I'm thinking like, man, this could be my last one through, not, you know, just for whatever, but like at some point, yeah, I won't be able to hike or backpack.
Well, I think that's one of the things that pops in our head as we get older. Yeah. You know, not to sound fatalistic, but I'm not getting any younger.
Yeah.
That was one of the reasons that I opted to take an early retirement, probably earlier than I should have.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to be able to get out and do 30-mile days when I'm 70 years old. Yeah. I'm not going to be able to do it. I don't know. Hiking and backpacking to me has become, it's just become who I enjoy being.
Yeah. No, and I think, yeah, I mean, it certainly does change you. It's changed me as well. And, you know, now I'm just kind of thinking about, you know, your Insta is Todd versus Todd. And, and wow, what a clever way to motivate yourself. And it's a daily reminder, right?
It's a daily struggle too. I mean, that couch is really comfortable.
I'm on my bed. If there was a hidden camera, and if I'm not either climbing or hiking, I'm like just laying in bed, like just sitting there. And I'm just thinking, you know, and then I think also when you're, I don't feel good, right? Just kind of laying there. And then, you know, then you probably you start getting sad, depressed, we have to spiral. Yes, we have to make it a conscious effort to stay active. So I guess we've kind of talked about it, but like if we just think about it, so you mainly are hiking with friends and not so much family solo.
If I'm not solo, mm-hmm. I've got just a small, very small handful of friends that are my, you know, my ride or dies.
Right.
You know, my buddy Ben, he can't bang out the big miles, but he'll set you up one heck of a base camp. And when you get back to camp, you're going to have something to eat.
Nice.
Joe, I thank the Lord every day for meeting Joe. We hike just about the same. We're around the same age. We've got a lot in common.
I'm going to have to jump in there. He said that He's always behind you.
And yeah, he also said I'm the most stubborn person he knows.
He said, like, he goes, I don't care what the elevation gain is. I don't care what the mileage is. Todd's not quitting.
Well, that's...
He is the most stubborn hiker.
Yeah, guilty. We gave Joe the trail name Pine Frog on the Centennial Trail. And one day somebody's going to bestow something on me that reflects how stubborn I am on the trail. And, you know, I'm waiting for it, but
yeah,
it's going to happen.
Like, I think just kind of thinking about the normal day to day, or not day to day, but like, if you kind of just look back at all your hiking trips over the last year, let's say, would you say most of it is solo, or is it with your kind of ride or die friends?
I would say over the last year, it's been mostly the ride or dies.
Yeah.
You know, it's hit or miss.
Yeah.
You know, because you know how busy Joe is.
Yeah.
I mean, all my friends are still working. It's hard for them to get away.
Yeah.
So I do a lot of stuff solo, but this past year it's worked out that I've been able to do a lot of stuff with friends.
Okay. Yeah. And like for me, I think most of my stuff is solo except for my trips to Guad. And I'm on the Lone Star hiking trail almost every Sunday, usually from the weekend after Labor Day until, I think last year I went all the way up to the first weekend of June. And like today we have a cool front. Well, it's like today we have a cool front, which is not bad, but I usually first weekend May, I usually try to, and then it'll probably be just spot hikes. But yeah, that's kind of my hiking season.
Yeah, the summers here in Texas really put a damper on things.
I don't mind the heat horribly too much, but them damn mosquitoes and horseflies.
Oh yeah.
Oh man, forget that. Like I can maybe hike earlier in the morning, or you know, like I can maybe accommodate the heat just with the timing, but man, those bugs, forget that. That's just miserable.
It takes all the fun out of it.
Absolutely. So what would you say your favorite state or national park is in Texas and why?
Oh, that's a loaded question. Yeah.
You only have one hike left, and it's got to be in Texas, and it's got to be at a state or a national park. What are you picking?
I'm torn.
I'll give you a state park and a national.
Okay. I would have to say, if it came down to just one, I've got a lollipop 75-mile loop I want to do out at Guad.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to do the Big Bend 100.
But
if it came down to it, I would probably have to choose Guadalupe.
Yeah.
Just because it's so much more remote and it still feels wild. Not saying that Big Bend's not wild.
Right.
But there's just something about the Guads that, it gets you. It just gets you.
You know, and yes. And like for me, the same thing. And it's Guad. Like if you said, Jason, in my retirement, I inherited $1 bazillion and I'm going to pay for your next 100 adventures. It's going to be, I'm going to Guad 99% of the time and then probably a Caprock. First off, you know, I'm kind of like I like the black sheep of the family. And, you know, Guad is the black sheep to Big Ben.
Right.
And Guad.
How many people have you talked to that have never heard of Guadalupe?
A lot.
Yeah, exactly.
And the same thing, like I could care less to go to Palo Duro, but you give me a Caprock, I'm there. And so, yeah, absolutely. Guadalupe Mountains. And you think about, like, for me, all the blood, sweat, and tears that I poured into that park, like, you know, like, yeah, I couldn't. That would be mine, you know.
Well, and it's got a history that appeals to me.
Oh, yes.
Just like the Ouachita Mountains, the Ouachita Trail is that's where my heart lies.
Yeah.
it's, you know, Oklahoma was Indian territory back in the day. The movie and the book True Grit took place in Oklahoma. You know, the movies were filmed in Colorado and New Mexico, but the book took place in Oklahoma. That whole cowboys and Indians vibe to it kind of transfers out to Guad, you know, with the Mescalero Apache.
Yes.
You know, that's, I love that stuff.
Yeah. You know how long it took me to find Jose's grave?
Oh, how long?
2.5 years.
Oh man, it took me like a week.
So what happened was, it was I would go into Van Horn if I wasn't, you know, camping, and I would stay in Van Horn or just passing through. I found this little restaurant about the size of this room, like 4 or 5 tables, called Mom's Kitchen.
The best kind of restaurants are like that.
Yes. And the grandfather was the busboy and the waiter, and the grandmother was a cook. 2-person operation. And so
best food you ever had.
Oh, I have pictures where I accidentally licked the plate. I was just or I had 2 dinners. It was so good. And so me and Mr. Espinosa, we would talk the history of Van Horn. And in the 70s, he was a justice of the peace. So he, you know, and as a kid, they would go out, and he told me, he goes, you know, there's a grave out, you know, close to the park entrance of Guadalupe Mountains. It's an old Mexican Apache, they think, grave. He goes, I can't remember the location. You know, you're going to have to research it. And so then I started researching it and kind of thought I found where it was. And then, you know, still didn't try to go find it. And then there's a group from Midland, Odessa, their Facebook group. We were going to be at the park at the same time, and I was going to take them out to the secret plane crash that you can't visit.
Mm.
And
you're getting near my soapbox.
we got time for it. And so I was, you know, I told them, I'm like, you know, I know where the plane is. I've been there twice. I didn't find it, but one route that are the route that I'm going, it's just too dangerous. And I was with my son, you know, and I had him waiting up on the ridge just in case something happened. And you can't really see where you're stepping, and it's steep. I go, if you would agree, I want to take us all a different way. So I want to go past that ridge, go over the next peak, drop down that wash, and then work our way back where it's flat. And then we just mm-hmm. hike up to it. And it worked out perfect. We found it. But the night before, you know, I said, hey, there's an old Indian grave out here, and kind of like, you know, this is the story, blah, blah, blah. You guys want to find it? And they're like, yeah. So, you know, we drove here, you know, parked, and knew where it was. We hiked out to where we thought. We actually passed it up, and we're, you know, we have our phones from, you know, where you can see El Cap in the background, you see Jose's grave, and we're like, it's got to be right here. We spent 2 hours out there walking around that area, couldn't find it. I hiked up on the rocks to the highway, still couldn't see it
up where that car crash is.
Yeah. So and I'm walking back to our car, and I'm like just devastated. And we're thinking like somebody had to just remove the marker or what, it fell over. And then all of a sudden, and you know, you don't have cell service out there in that section. Well, right. I got a text saying we found it. Man, I came running down the old highway, cut across through all that crap. I mean, my legs were trashed. And that was probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago. And I visit Jose every trip I go to Guad. I go sit out there with him.
That's cool.
Hang out.
That's such a cool story too.
And the last time, so in February was the last time I visited with him. 2 weeks before that, I actually found through New Mexico Archive the actual letter that Colonel Captain James Lonestreet wrote to his superiors of how Jose actually died.
Wow.
So, you know, it says like, you know, he was out scouting and got killed. Mm-hmm. you know, all that stuff. Well, where he's buried is not where he was killed. He was killed up by El Capitan. So Captain James Longstreet had reprimanded him the day before because he had left the party that he was with. And so they don't know. So the next day, you know, of course, people saying, you know, he's missing. So they don't know if he had just abandoned them because he was mad or upset, right, or if he just kind of went on his own and went to scout. But he left them, and he was murdered by, they say the mountain, but the only mountain there is El Capitan. So closer towards El Capitan, they went out and found him, and they were camping where he's buried now. They brought him back there and buried him.
Wow.
And then, and I'll email you the letter.
Oh yeah, please do.
They buried him there. And then of course their camp there, you know, they're trying to get an upper hand on the Indians and attack them. Well, they were running out of water, so they moved camps to another camp where there was a spring. And then the Indians had came through, saw that they had buried him, dug him up, scalped him, you know, kind of the story that we all know. But yeah, I'll send you the letter.
Oh, that's the stuff that I love about the Guads.
Yes.
And the Washitas. There's history there that, I don't know, maybe it's just because I'm old, but I love cowboy and Indian type stuff.
I would have never thought, and even if you asked me a year ago, like I would have said that cowboy and Indians and stuff are my interest. But when you start thinking about it, like I love Lonesome Dove. Right. You know, I researched Jose and visit with him, but I would be lying to myself to say that that's not an interest of mine. I just enjoy that stuff.
I used to make fun of my dad for watching Westerns, and now if there's an old Western on, I watch it because I love that time period. I just think it's too cool.
Absolutely. And yeah, so I guess to kind of go back, we did find the plane. And we'll let's get into that part of the episode here in a bit. But yeah, some of the rules and stuff for Guad are pretty disappointing
that
they have. So what about your favorite trail in Texas? So let's say your favorite trail in Texas and then your favorite trail just anywhere else in the United States.
Favorite trail in Texas. I really, really enjoyed the Outer Mountain Loop at Big Bend. I caught it, the South Rim. I caught that early in the morning. The sun was coming up. The desert down the Dodson Trail was covered with clouds. It was just, it was magical.
Wow.
But favorite trail in Texas. I can't get away from basically the GRT route from New Mexico to the peak. You know, you come down Permian Reef.
Yeah.
And you go up McKittrick, hit Tejas, follow it to Pine Springs, and then go up the peak. That's just...
Have you done that whole thing?
Oh, yeah. I've done it like 5 times.
And so you have... So first off, you're going to invite me the next time. And secondly, you already have the water caching and everything kind of...
I've kind of got the GRT down to a science.
All right.
Now, I say that, and you know from Joe's episode, we had a little bit of a water issue. It was the first time Joe and I had ever hiked together. But yeah, I've done the GRT at least 4 times. I through hiked it with Cameron from Ultralight Outdoors.
Right.
And I've section hiked it just multiple times. I say I'm writing a guidebook for it, but I don't know if that's ever going to be complete because every time I need to get out there and well, I need a little bit more information about this stretch of trail. You know, are there any campsites right here? Is there a place to make camp?
Yeah.
It winds up being closed. You know, I think there's 13 miles of the GRT through Carlsbad is off limits right now.
Is it because of that body they found?
No, they've opened. Nope. They've reopened that part of the park. Yeah, I want to say it's 13 miles of it through Carlsbad is closed. 5 miles of that is a road walk. You know, okay, the road washed away during the flood. A car can't make it through there, but a hiker, you know, my two legs will take me pretty much anywhere.
Yes.
So yeah, like I say, I'm supposedly writing a guidebook, but it keeps hitting snag after snag. But it's an awesome trail. It's an awesome trail. It's hard. It's rough, but I mean, that's kind of the stuff I gravitate towards anyway.
That's why you wake up in the morning, right?
Yeah, right. Well, it's like that old, before my time, that John F. Kennedy speech he gave about going to the moon. You know, we go to the moon, not because it is easy, but because it is hard.
Yeah.
And that kind of sums up my hiking philosophy.
Oh, I hear that. I think if I had to pick a trail, and it broke me because I just wasn't in the right mindset. I was in the mindset that this is going to be easy. And we started late is the El Capitan Trail to Shumard campsite.
See, there's two trails out there that I haven't done, and that's one of them.
Let me tell you, it's not hard, like physically hard. It's hard that, you know, a lot of the trail is gone. We got cliffed out twice. It's overgrown. Mm-hmm. So you're walking almost like there's some exposure, and if you were seeing where you were stepping, it wouldn't be that big of a deal, but you can't see where you're stepping. So you don't know if
until
it's like
you've already stepped.
Yes. You don't know. Like, is there, could be like a little cut in, and it's, you know, 300-500 feet drop. You don't know. You can't see where you're stepping. And, I just know when we got to Shumard, it was at dark, and I told the guys, I'm like, I'm not hiking this back tomorrow. I'll hike out to the highway and hitchhike. And that's what we did. But yeah, that's I do want to hike it again and start earlier. But yeah, that's, you get, that trail gives you everything. Like,
well, you've seen my route for the, I'm calling it the Guadalupe Route 66, because it's, yep, 66 miles through the park from the New Mexico line to the highway.
Yep. So can you share with us and the list, or with myself and the listeners, your most memorable Texas hiking experience?
I've got two that come to mind.
Let's do it.
My very first backpacking trip was the Lone Star hiking trail. Don't know a thing about backpacking. Went and bought an 85 liter pack.
Oh my gosh.
Filled it up. 85 liters wasn't enough.
What?
Had a change of clothes for every day. Had what is now my kayak camping cook kit with pots, pans, plates, you know, everything.
Todd.
Didn't know any better. You know, I mean, I'm not ashamed to admit it. I was.
Hey, we're all there, right?
I was as new could be. But I took one of my friends from work, and we took a week off work. We're going to go down and through hike the trail. And we made it 8 miles that first day. And I was in a little bit better shape. So I would stop and wait and wait. And I don't want to name my friend, because if he heard it, he would be embarrassed. But I'd have to wait for him to catch up. At one point, we made it 11 miles of the whole trail. And at one point, I walked back down the trail to see where he was at. I set down my pack, walked back down the trail, and I came around the corner, and he was on his hands and knees crawling down the trail. I can't do this. I can't do this.
Oh, so did y'all do any training before or hiking?
Zero. Before? Zero.
Yeah. I love this.
So I grabbed his pack, and of course that, you know, that just punched him right in the pride.
Yeah.
And, we walked back up to camp. We set up camp for the night, and it was a good night. You know, like any night on trail, you know, you're camping with a buddy, you're going to have a good time.
Yeah.
But the next morning it was like, Todd, I can't do 96 miles. So, okay. You know, I'm not going to hold that against you. So my wife, being the angel that she is, she had driven us, dropped us off. I called her back and I said, baby, you're going to have to come down here and get us. So the next morning she drove back down there, picked us up and took us home. And that was my first experience with backpacking.
How did it feel to bail? And this is going to lead to another question, but just at that moment, did you feel like you didn't want to bail? Did you were you okay with it?
I was okay with it because I knew how much of a bad time my buddy was having.
Yeah.
I think I could have kept going. I don't know if I would have been able to do the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like say my pack had to be 50 pounds. It had to be.
That's crazy.
But, it wasn't really a big deal.
Yeah.
But it was enough exposure to it to be like, you know what? I really enjoyed this. This was fun.
Yeah.
And
I was just kind of thinking that how many times do we get into situations where we should call it, we should cut it, and we don't. And then you read about people getting lost or, eventually, people get lost and then I don't know, end up just dying on the trail. Like
I've bailed on several trips. The first time I tried to do the Centennial Trail in South Dakota, I went up by myself.
Yeah.
And I think I did 4 days and it was unseasonably hot. I mean, I couldn't get enough water in me.
Mm.
Getting just terrible headaches every day from the dehydration. I bailed on that.
Yeah.
You know, of course, then I drive home and 2 days later it's snowing in the Black Hills and I'm kicking myself, you know. Oh, if you just stuck it out for one day.
Yeah, but that could have, you know, it first off, it may not have done it, but like,
oh, heat stroke's no joke.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that voice in your head that says, oh no, you know, keep going, you know, sometimes that's not a wise move. And there's that fine line of when it becomes detriment versus, yeah, probably I could, but I would always say that, you know, probably the best thing to do is when in doubt, just call it. Like, there's all, and live to fight another day.
I think Joe touched on it. Our first trip we ever took together, you know, not only did we run out of water, but after we found water, the decision was, okay, now that we have water, we have the capability to finish this route, but tomorrow's going to be 90 mile an hour winds.
Yep.
You know, do we feel comfortable going out on this ridge and scrambling down some stuff, you know, that neither one of us has ever done before with the wind blowing like that? And so we called it.
Yeah.
We went back. A couple of months later, me, Joe, Kyle, and my buddy Josh, and tried the same route, and the weather turned on us and it started raining. It was like, I'm not going to try to scramble down this in the rain. Yeah. I mean, even if the rain quits, it's going to be wet and slippery. It's just not worth it.
Absolutely. And so I think it's important, you know, to the listeners and even to ourselves that it's okay to call it.
It's training. It's training for the next time.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we're not winning any awards to try to push ourselves to death or put ourselves in these types of situations and try to survive them. So,
well, and those kind of trips, like the first time Joe and I went, we bailed on it. We ran out of the water and then we had to call it because of the wind. Those are the stories that are the best ones to tell.
Absolutely.
Let me tell you about this time we were out in the Guides and we ran out of water, you know?
Yeah. Hey, he had me on. I was like, okay, what happened next? You're like, I'm just mentally, you know, when
I can elaborate on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We are, our plan, we're hiking a section of the GRT and there's cattle tanks. I've been to those cattle tanks more times than I can count. And there's always been water in them. Joe and I get there. We ran out of water the night before. We roll up to the cattle tanks. There's no water. Hey, no problem. That was plan A. Let's go ahead and go to plan B. So we hike a little bit further down the trail to some more cattle tanks. There's guaranteed to be water in here. There was no water in plan B.
So when you say cattle tank, you're just talking about a metal receptacle that holds water for cows. And how do these things get water in them? Just rain, or someone drives around and
there is opens up a... Have you ever done any of the trails up in the Lincoln?
No.
Oh, well, you let me know.
Yeah, I would.
But national parks, you know how national parks are managed. It's very, very structured.
Right.
You know, like say Guad, you can't even go off trail anymore. National forests are managed totally different.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the Lincoln is, I don't know how they lease it out or what, but it's open range cattle.
Okay.
It's still public land, but the ranchers in the area can graze their cattle on it. And you'll be walking down a trail, which might be a Jeep road or a four-wheeler road, or it might be an actual single track trail. And there'll be a black, some sort of plastic, some sort of polyethylene plastic, 2 or 3 inch pipe that just runs for miles along the trail. And if you follow that, it'll dump into one of those cattle tanks.
Okay.
And they pump water up into the high country for the cows. And it's like the ones that Joe and I were counting on were probably 3,000 gallon tanks. There's a couple of new ones up there that are 5,400 gallon tanks. And they fill those, they're closed on the top. Well, most of them are closed on the top, so it's not rain dependent. They pump water from a spring or some sort of aquifer up to those tanks for the cows.
And then when you say it's closed on top, how do the cows get to the...
There'll be a hose at the bottom that goes over. Usually it's just like a 55 gallon drum cut in half with a float in it, like the float in your toilet.
Yeah.
And as it goes down, as the cows drink, as it evaporates, it opens that valve and gravity feeds back into that trough.
And so that big black plastic thing was empty.
Two of them.
Oh my God.
Our plan A, there were two tanks. Both of them were dry. Plan B. Oh, this one's guaranteed. Never seen it empty. It was dry. Climbed up on top of it and looked down in it. There's no water. Okay. Well, plan C, there's some recently installed bear boxes that they installed along the GRT. If somebody's dropped off a cache there, we'll get that and we'll refill it when we leave.
Right.
The only thing in the bear box was trash. People were throwing their trash in the bear boxes, which infuriated me to no end. Plan D.
And that wraps up another exciting episode of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode today, and stay tuned for our next episode where we will pick back up where we left off and guarantee to uncover many more hiking gems and share many more tips to enhance your experience on the trail. Until then, happy trails and happy hiking.